Good morning. Growing in spirit, living with compassion, inspired to serve. That's the tagline of our mission statement, and this year we have been focused on what it means to live with compassion. Not just sometimes, not just when it's convenient, and not just because it feels good, but because it's a way of life. And so today, as we wrap up our year of focus on what it means to be a person of compassion, we will look once more at our hearts and how we might share some of the compassion within us with those around us, not only this glorious summer season, but every season of our lives. So come. Let us look into our hearts. Come, let us worship together. John Hopewell and Christina Stevens to come forward, as well as Christine Johnston, because we have a special award to Christine.
The Victor and Nancy Knight Living Tribute Award was established by the Canadian Unitarian Council in 1995. The Knights worked tirelessly as volunteers in furthering the principles of Unitarianism in Canada. Some of you may know their descendants, Bunny Turner and Kim Turner, who have also been very active in our movement. An award is made annually to a living person who has made a notable contribution as a volunteer to the furthering of our liberal religious principles in Canada.
I'm delighted as your CUC board representative to report that this year the recipient is Christine Johnston. And I'd like to tell you... I'd just like to tell you a couple of things about why she was considered... for this award. She has made a distinguished contribution to Canadian Unitarianism for many years and at all levels, from the local to the international. She served on the board and as chair of both the Toronto First and the Victoria First congregations, and has served on the CUC board, the Canadian Unitarian Council board, from 2002 to 2006 as the social justice liaison. As a longtime member of Canadian Unitarians for Social Justice, she continues to remind us of our social obligations to implement our principles. Christine has long been active in the International Association for Religious Freedom, the IARF, including many years as the Canadian chapter chair. Other denominational involvements have included chairing the Vancouver Island Unitarian Committee, and leadership positions in the local partner church program, Denominational Affairs Committee, Kairos, and Childhaven International. Christine has done a lot of work in preserving our history, including many years of service as archivist of the First Toronto Congregation and the writing of a full-length biography of Joseph Workman, one of Unitarians' leading 19th century pioneers. She is a founding member and served as secretary of the Canadian Unitarian and Universalist Historical Society. And if you don't know what that is, you can talk to Christine about it. She also facilitated the publication of the writings of a former Toronto minister, John Morgan. Usually a familiar figure at CUC annual meetings, Christine was unable to be present in Montreal to receive the award because her holiday time this year is going to be serving as the CUC delegate to the Congress of the International Association for Religious Freedom in England later this summer. So instead, the award is being presented to Christine today, and I'd like to ask the Reverend Shauna to present the award.
Sitting at our tables in Montreal, waiting to hear about who the illustrious person who had given so much time and energy and effort throughout their lifetime to Unitarianism and making sure that it flourished. And I thought, I wonder who this year's recipient will be. And I wonder if it's somebody that I'll know. Because, you know, usually I'm pretty new up here. I don't really know generally. And then they said, it's Christine Johnston. And I said, not only do I know her, but I love her, and she's an engine in our congregation. So it is my delight, my honor, my privilege, and my pleasure to present this ward, the Certificate of Excellence to Christine Johnston for all of her hard work on behalf of our tradition, and I hope that you will join me in applauding her efforts.
Good job.
There's 19 nights so far. John Hopewell's name is on here, if anybody wishes to look at the list. Well, I feel very grateful to the senior leaders of our movement in Canada who chose me this year. That was a total and wonderful surprise, and I feel very honored to receive this. Thank you.
Apparently, I have just enough voice to get through this last sermon of the year. Hope I have some voice left for Sunday next, when Melora and I, as I hope you read in the e-weekly, will be sharing a meditation that we wrote in two voices. I hope you'll join us online for that at 8 a.m. next Sunday. This morning's reading is a lovely poem that I uncovered this week, simply entitled Rest, which felt appropriate. It's by the poet Richard Jones. Rest. It's so late I could cut my lights and drive the next 50 miles of empty interstate by starlight, flying along in a dream, countryside alive with shapes and shadows, but exit ramps lined with 18-wheelers and truckers sleeping in their cabs make me consider pulling into a rest stop and closing my eyes. I've done it before, parking next to a family sleeping in a Chevy, mom and dad up front, three kids in the back, the windows slightly misted by the sleeper's breath. But instead of resting, I'd smoke a cigarette, play the radio low, and keep watch over the wayfarers in the car next to me. A strange paternal concern and compassion for their well-being rising up inside me. This was before I had children of my own and had felt the sharp edge of love and anxiety whenever I tiptoed into darkened rooms of sleep to study the small, peaceful faces of my beloved darlings. Now, the fatherly feelings are so strong. The snoring truckers are lucky I'm not standing on the running board, tapping on the window, asking, is everything okay? But it is. Everything's fine. The trucks are all together, sleeping on the gravel shoulders of exit ramps, and the crowded rest stop I'm driving by is a perfect oasis in the moonlight. The way I see it, I've got a second wind, and on the radio, an all-night country station. Nothing for me to do on this road but drive and give thanks. I'll be home by dawn. place in the heart. We have spent at least one Sunday each month of this church year looking at some facet of compassion. Compassion for ourselves, compassion for others, compassion for the earth. And we have looked at spiritual practices like loving kindness meditation that help us to cultivate compassion. In all of our exploring, I think that perhaps an equation has emerged. Compassion equals empathy. If they are not one and the same, and perhaps they're not, they are certainly very close relatives. Empathy, so sweetly described by the poet in this morning's reading, is that impulse to care beyond our immediate sphere, to love other people's children at rest stops, or AIDS orphans in Africa, or to resist pipelines on behalf of water and sea life that can't speak for themselves, and toward whom you feel a deep caring. Compassion is, as my title this morning suggests, a place in the heart. A space and a place that is sometimes easy to access and at other times hard to uncover. Literally hard to move all that stuff out of the way so you can remember that you have a place in you that cares deeply. So this morning I want to talk about practices that help that space in our being that feels empathy to stay open and accessible. I want to tell a story about my own first deep encounter with compassion. And then I want to speak a bit about the implications of all of this, the love ripples I was talking about earlier. We cultivate empathy and therefore our ability to act with compassion with spiritual practices of attention and expressions of gratitude and generosity, and by acting in the world with intention, by doing things deliberately and purposefully with the intent of sharing. We see how our life and our life choices intersect with and interact with the world around us and the people we encounter along the way. And we keep fine-tuning our compassion as we go. We cultivate empathy, it seems to me, perhaps most intensely when we look at the moments of challenge in our own lives. When we look at those places within us that have experienced hurt, those bruised and vulnerable spots in us. And then in looking at those bruises, we see and we seek within them some sort of broader, more universal human understanding. How does what I have experienced mirror the fears and the joys, the losses and the outrage of others? How might those places in me that overlap with someone else help me to find common cause with others? I recently listened to a fabulous TED Talk by the author Andrew Solomon. You heard me speak earlier this year about Andrew Solomon. He wrote his first book about depression. It's called The Noonday Demon. He wrote a more recent book called Far From the Tree, which is about kids who are very different from their parents in dramatic and significant ways. And during this most recent TED Talk of his, he talked about how those hurt places, how those bruised places in his own life have made him a better person. He talked about how being bullied as a child has made him ultimately a better husband, a better father, and even a better gay man, if you can believe it. He tells his whole story. He arcs around from his own childhood of being bullied, and he ends with the story of his 50th birthday. And he talks about being at his 50th birthday party and his four-year-old son wanting to speak, and his partner not quite sure whether to allow the four-year-old to have the microphone. But finally relenting, when the four-year-old kept persisting, being handed the microphone, and the four-year-old simply looked at Andrew Solomon and said, "Daddy, if you were a kid, I would be your friend." Andrew Solomon went from the bullied child on the playground to the beloved father of a four-year-old who would be his friend if he was a kid. Andrew Solomon's point in the TED Talk, perhaps I'm blowing it for you now, is that what we all do in our lives is we have these huge experiences, these things that change us and shape us and mold us, and we take those moments and we have to, because we must, forge meaning. What does this mean? How have I been changed? What do I know now that I didn't know yesterday? And then we have to create out of that sense of meaning a sense of identity. His litany by the end was forge meaning, create identity. We make meaning of our life experiences, and then we find people who identify with what we have been through, and we create pockets of understanding who we are and how we relate to others in the world by creating a sense of identity. As I watched Solomon speak, I was saying amen over and over again because I recognized some of my life experiences in what he was saying and felt a bit like he was preaching a sermon that I had already preached many times over. My own sort of conversion, first initial bruise experience that sent me off on a life of empathy and compassion is rooted in an experience that I had when I was a 19-year-old. Some of you have heard me tell the story before of how I came home from university at the end of one semester, it was the holiday season, and got a phone call that no one ever wants to receive. A phone call telling me that one of my connections through Unitarian Youth Group, who lived up in Massachusetts and had been on his college campus, had been shot and killed by a random act of violence by another young man on his campus. His death, Galen Gibson's death, sent me into a life of advocating nonviolence. I, a person who had never written a letter to a congressperson or tried to speak up at a public meeting about safety, suddenly found myself writing all kinds of letters, donating money however I could earn it to causes that would become my life's work then, sort of a gun control activist in the States. It made me look at the seeds of violence. I began to study when I went back to school and university, sort of domestic violence and the issues of violence against women. I started to look at all kinds of issues that I had never wanted to look at before because it was too hard. When this death came knocking at my door, I realized I could avert my gaze no longer. That situations like Moncton, New Brunswick, are just around the corner for any and everyone. Anytime one of these random shootings occurs again, it sends me back into that mode. it reminds me once again that we need these ripples of compassion in a way that we perhaps don't fully appreciate most of the time. I worked longer and harder as a 19-year-old than I ever had before at looking at what makes people turn toward violence as the answer, and to think more about how we might stem that tide. What could we do, I wondered, not just as a culture at large, but in our own interactions, each and every individual one of us, to encourage love and respect and care to become the ethic of interaction over violence and mistrust? How can I try to ensure, I have wondered recently, that my son doesn't buy into the male stereotypes of macho and aggressive behavior? How can any of us create a ripple of love out from us that helps all of us to embrace an ethic of nonviolent, loving being? As I thought about those ripples this week, sitting in my office, I turned, and there next to my desk was a quotation from William Ellery Channing, founding Unitarian minister in the States from the 19th century, whom I have quoted to you many times. There he was once again, sitting on my shoulder. Channing wrote, "I am a living member of the great family of all souls, and I cannot improve or suffer myself without diffusing good or evil around me through an ever-enlarging sphere. I belong to this family. I am bound to it by vital bonds. I am always exerting an influence upon it. I can hardly perform an act that is confined in its consequences to myself. Others are affected by what I am and say and do, so that a single act of mine may spread and spread in widening circles through a nation or humanity." I didn't make that up. Channing wrote that hundreds of years ago, and yet there it was looking at me again. "I can't do anything that is, hardly do anything at all," he says, "that is confined in its consequences only to me." Which means that what I do in the world matters. Even the little stuff that I don't think matters very much. Channing says that a single act of mine may spread and spread in widening circles through a nation or humanity. I read that again and I thought that it scares the bejesus out of me, and it is also the source of my hope. Think about that for a moment. Really, we say that we believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, every single one, even the one who drives you crazy. That person has inherent worth and dignity too. And that person is spreading through ever widening circles. What they do, what they say, who they are matters. Therefore, there are implications for how we are with one another, both for good and for ill. I'm not kidding when I say it is the source of deep concern, and it is the source of my hope. Because if there is only one thing that each of us could do that would matter in ever-widening circles, we could change the world. And if we keep doing these little things that spread disaster and hurt and violence and illness and all these things, global climate change, guess what? Ever widening circle. It's the same method by which we share who we are. The call is coming now. So, when the people in our social responsibility coalition talk to us about doing various things to change the world, I always start by looking at myself and saying, just like that ancient Chinese wisdom about if you want peace in the world, you have to start at home. If you want peace in the home, you have to start with yourself. It goes back and back and back in ripples. The same is true. Social justice, good in the world, ripples out from me, from each and every one of us. And so spiritual practice is critically important. Because when we do our practices, we become aware and attentive of how we are living and what we are doing. We become attentive to the ways in which we are being love and compassion, or being counter to who we want to be in the world. If I can enlarge my care and compassion and empathy, and it ripples out from me in ever-enlarging spheres, then that is how the world can become a more habitable place for all beings. For all souls, as Channing said. I am a living member of the great family of all souls, and I cannot improve or suffer myself without diffusing good or evil around me through an ever-enlarging sphere. I will have to be careful, won't I? We will have to be careful, won't we? We will have to look within again and again. We will have to ask, am I living the life that is diffusing in ever-enlarging spheres what I want it to be diffusing? And if you believe the lyrics that Farrell and I sang earlier, I walk it with a reverent air, 'cause everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. If everything is holy, how can we not be reverent? How can we not be careful? How can we not bring as much love and heart as we possibly can? Because if everything is holy now, then it has profound implications for how we live our lives. If we are surrounded by holiness in other people and the planet, if we ourselves are a fragment of that holiness, which is that's what I believe, that's my theology, each and every one of you is a fragment of the holy, then compassion would seem the only reasonable response, as far as I can tell. Everything is holy and wholly worthy of our respect and reverence and appreciation. So may we be the bearers of compassion, the sources of empathy and understanding in a world too often focused on individualism and the betterment of the few. May we still uphold the many and make space in our hearts for even more still. May you have a summer full of holy nows over and over again. I will miss you and I will delight in my time away, both simultaneously true. And we will see you again in mid-August. So may you have a summer full of holy nows. Blessed be, and amen. There is no better benediction than what you just sang. Sorrow and pleasure seem united in dance, web of life. May this thread I weave mingle compassion with all I believe. Mercy be my guide as I seek my way. Lead me into this tender day. Speak through me in all I do and say. May it be so for us this day and every day.